In this verse, the word Buddha Sevaya is very significant.
Buddha means old, Sevaya means by service. Perfect knowledge is acquired from the acharyas who liberate the souls. No one can be perfect in knowledge without being trained by the Parampara system. Krita Maharaja was completely trained in that line. Therefore, he did not deserve to be considered an ordinary man. An ordinary man who has only a conception of bodily existence is always bewildered by the modes of material nature. So, here Lord Vishnu is warning or advising Krita Maharaj. Krita Prabhu, Krita Maharaj, because of his attempt to perform the 100th fire sacrifice, taking away that prestige from Indra, Indra stole his horse, and that created so many disturbances, including Indra having adopted the dress of a false sannyasi and trying to escape being punished by Krita by that type of a ruse. So, in other words, through the struggle between Krita Maharaj and Indra, bogus yogis were introduced into the world. So finally Vishnu himself comes and he's intervening here. He came with Indra, and as he said in the previous verse, Indra is apologizing. He has come with me to be forgiven by you, therefore please excuse him. Previous acharyas tell us we have to be very forgiving. It's not
recommended to the unforgiving, somebody that's repentant. Just like a spiritual master, he's always forgiving his disciple for so many offenses. It says that the spiritual master rejects the disciple because he's fallen or makes mistakes, then what would be the hope of the disciples? How would the disciple get delivered? The rabbi, the guru, should be trying to reform the disciple rather than rejecting the disciple. So similarly here, Bhita is the king, but he's following the acharyas. He's not an ordinary king, he's a great devotee, he's a Shaktivish. So whatever he does should be dictated by the instructions of his acharyas. So that's why Vishnu is advising him. And if you do something just because of the influence of material nature, not following the instruction of Guru, then it would be all a waste of time. It's an interesting point of view here. What is the use of doing devotional service if in the crucial instances we don't follow? If when we have to make a decision, we make it on the basis of sentiment. We make it on the basis of some material vision and we don't follow the instructions of Guru and previous acharyas. The whole idea of devotional service is that we are guided by Sadhu Shastra Guru. It's not that intrinsically we know what's right or not. We may or may not. But the way we verify whether what we're doing is correct is whether it's authorized by the Shastra, authorized by the Guru, authorized by the previous acharya. Since pushing this issue, there's nowhere that the acharyas have told Prithu Maharaj if he has to perform 100 asana yajnas. He just thought, I'll do it. Well, what's the big deal? I mean, Krishna doesn't, if his pure devotee offers 98 or 99, 100 doesn't make a big difference to you. It was an ego thing for Indra, but it's not an issue for Krishna. So Indra, in order to, who's not on the pure devotional level, he's in a sakam bhakti. There's two kinds of bhakti, there's sakam and niskam. Kama means with desires. So sakam is with desires and niskam is without desires. So the demigods are generally sakam devotees. They're devotees who have desires and they want to satisfy those desires. But they're also submissive to God. So therefore they're given these big positions in the universe as kind of material angels to manage things. That way they can also enjoy and they're doing God's work, doing Krishna's work. So when they have some desires, and it's called sakam, they're not completely desireless. But if you're devotee, like Prithu Maharaj, he's supposed to be a niskam bhakta. So for him, all these issues are not so important, how many yajnas. What's important is that he manages his kingdom as he does his service properly. In order to perform his service as a king that happens to be his servant, it's not at all essential that he has to do 100 asana yajnas. Probably 50 was enough, or 20 or 10, I mean, who knows. Even 99 is quite a major feat. These are very complex sacrifices. It's a very important instruction for all of us because, you know, we are also going to always be faced with making decisions. And on what basis we make a decision. I mean, I sometimes hear devotees, a famous cliche, like famous last words is, anyway, I'm not a pure devotee. I mean, I can just say that. I'm not afraid of more than I can do any damn nonsense. It's all right, you know. Because I said I'm not afraid of more. But then we're not going to be pure devotees either. The point is that we may not be a pure devotee, but we're trying to be pure devotees. And that means that we shouldn't do things knowingly against the advice of sadhu, shastra, and guru. If we know that what we're doing is wrong, but we do it anyway, then what is the value of all our devotional service? Maybe sometimes people get bewildered what's right and what's wrong. But generally somebody who's experienced in devotional service, they know. Because they've heard so many relevant instructions from the Guru Parampara. But a new devotee, and there are many new devotees here, so what is incumbent upon them is to build up your database, build up your library of instructions from Guru, from Sadhu, from Shastra, so that any circumstance that happens, you have something to draw on. That in this circumstance, this is what I should do. Many times the lives of great devotees form for us an important resource, because we can apply these examples from these great devotees' lives in our life. Prithu Maharaj is a pure devotee. We're hearing about his past. Later on, we may also be in a situation where there's some ego struggle with another devotee. Who's going to win the marathon? Who's going to do the finals? And we may be tempted to just, you know, go overboard and do something which is not really ethical. So here, this kind of instruction, that it's not worth it. You know, within the boundaries of approved activity, it's not, it doesn't matter whether he's first or second, what's in fifth or whatever. Point is that we try to do our very best for Krishna. If we break or act against our own principles in order to get some mundane achievement, and we don't please Krishna by that, then what's the whole purpose? What's the use of it? We're not actually trying to do anything for any other reason than to please Krishna and Guru. To just achieve some something for the sake of achieving it. I mean, it's like people, they struggle so hard to win an Olympic medal. Maybe it's because the money or the fame or the national prestige or combination of above or other things. Or sometimes it's just like an obsession. How to do it. But anything we do, it should ultimately be for pleasing Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to spread Krishna consciousness to the West simply because it was the order of his spiritual master. Because it was the prediction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to please Guru and Purata. In fact, he criticized that some preachers, they went to the West, then they came back to India after having gone and preached in the West, and they became very famous as, like, repatriated world preachers. And this way they got a lot of name and fame in India. There was the same ability if you wrote back from England. Means, you know, you've gone to England and gone to the West. So Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't interested in just going and do a little token preaching in the West and then come back and be a famous Indian sadhu. He He really wanted to see that people in the West were delivered from the fire of material evolution and energy. Therefore, he stuck it out and tried to establish a Krishna consciousness in the Western world. In fact, he wasn't even interested in preaching in India. Except after a few years of preaching in the West, when he got back to India, he saw that India was becoming materialistic, imitating the West. Then he said that we're preaching all over the world about the glories of Indian culture. India is beginning up their own culture and adopting Western culture. So it's kind of an obstacle in the long run for our preaching. If we can at least preserve the basic Krishna consciousness in India, it would be a very difficult situation, even for our preaching in the West. And since nobody is preaching in India amongst my godbrothers on a wide scale, therefore he saw no other alternative but to take it up himself. He said, really, my guru ordered me to preach in the West. So I'm taking up Indian preaching as kind of my own thing, as additional. So like everything Prabhupada did, he was analyzing how what he was doing was in keeping with what Prabhupada, what his guru had told him, what was needed. It wasn't like he just did things without thinking about it. So being a devotee here, we need also to consider different times what to do, what not to do. To do things which will be placing in Krishna. That's the ultimate purpose, Sama, Siddhi, Haritosha. It's like when Srivasa Thakur was chanting in the house of his house with Lord Chaitanya, and then his wife started crying in the hall in the house. They're all chanting out in the garden. Then he came in and said, what's wrong? And he said, my son died. Your son died. His dad broke off dead. And he looked, he says, really, he's dead? Okay, if he's dead, then there's nothing we can do. So stop crying, you're disturbing the kirtan. I don't want anybody to disturb what you can do with kirtan. But the mother couldn't stop crying, just lost her son. So look at it, if you don't stop crying, then you may also lose me. Then you may cry for the son and father and husband. And she got freaked out. Then he went back and joined the kirtan. Then after some time, Lord Chaitanya stopped the kirtan and said, what was the disturbance in the house? Then nothing, nothing, sorry. No, what was the disturbance in the house? Well, my son, Gopal, is dead. Your son died. What did you tell him? No, I didn't want to disturb your kirtan. Now come on. Then he said, the son died, you can tell. It's like an ordinary thing, it's a major thing. You could tell me. No, but I don't want to do anything to disturb you. Then Lord Shiva, look at this, Shiva, this is too much. I was like, you're so much dedicated to pleasing me. It's beyond the call of duty. Your son died, tell us, you know, it's not a major thing. Bring your son, well, why does he? Bring him here. So they brought the body out, and Lord Chaitanya told Gopal, Gopal, wake up! Come back! And Gopal became alive. Stand up! He stood up. So why have you left your mother and father? Why have you left them? Why have you done this? And then so he spoke,
I have had millions of births, unlimited births. Which mother and father are you talking about? Now he had come back from death, so he was in the spiritual perspective, point of Atman. No, I mean the last birth, Malini and Shiva. Why have you left him? Malini and Srivas, they are such great devotees. I am so blessed to have their association. But why do you ask me why I left them? My coming or going is not in my hands. You are the supreme controller. And you desire someone to leave, they leave. You desire them to stay, they stay. So by higher dictation, I was asked to go, and I was going back to the spiritual world. I left my body during the kirtan, so I have gone back to the spiritual world, but you brought me back. Why are you bringing me back to the spiritual world? So like that, they were discussing. And so then Lord Chaitanya asked Shiva's mother, so what do you want? So because she was so Krishna conscious, and she realized, my son is going back to Godhead, and why should I bring him back to the material world? You know, I'm going to miss him. But for my own interest, you know, if he's going back to the spiritual world, what could be better for him? She said, all right, let him go. Although naturally every parent would miss their children. But she was so selfless. Once she really knew what was happening, first it was just a shock, my son, I lost my son. But once she had a vision of what was actually happening, then she became peaceful. She said, it's all right. So then Lord Chaitanya said, okay, you can go. He lay down and died again. Went back to God. So then Lord Chaitanya took the body and they went with it to the Ganges, bathed it, cremated it. There was another case, of course, when Gopal, another, it was also Advaita Acharya's son was Gopal. He died at the Narasimha temple, but the Lord Chaitanya brought him back to life, kept him back. There was another case. What's the other case? In the glories of the I told you the glorious 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. About the Rakshasa who was delivered. So Lord Shiva explained this to Parvati, the glorious 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So once there was this Brahmana, he would regularly read and chant the Bhagavad Gita 11 chapters, like his daily practice. So he decided to go on a pilgrimage of different holy places. So he visited all the different holy places around India traveling. So in his journeys, one day he was walking and it was getting close to dark. So he came into a little village by the side of a mountain. And he asked, is there anywhere to stay here? And they told him, sure, there's a guest house. Why in the laughter? Then, so where is it? Down there. So then he found his guest house. Every time he asked about the guest house, people looked at him and said, sure, that's what it is. Something about this guest house. And he asked the guest house manager if he could stay there. He says, oh, sure. You know, everybody's welcome to stay here, no problem. If you want to, it's up to you, you can stay. Alright, so what the facilities? So while we have the room here, you can stay in the room, and now we're down at the end of the hall. Over there is the toilets and the whole thing.
There are other people there in the guest house. Look pretty normal. So he sat down in his room and chanted the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita and took rest. Then in the morning he got up, found the whole guest house was empty. Well, the guy told him that, "I locked the door at 9 o'clock at night, I open up in the morning, it's for your protection." So he checked, the door was locked, but all the people were gone. This is very strange. How are all the people gone? So he went to the bathroom, finished up his business, came back, chanted his 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, went back to the door is still locked. So what's going on here? Everybody else is gone, and I'm locked in. So then finally the guy comes with the keys and big lock, you know, unlocks it, all opens the door. When he opens the door, looks at the guy. Shut. You're alive. Yeah, I think so. Why? Am I supposed to be alive?
Oh no.
Good morning. What's wrong with this place? This is really weird. Something strange about this whole thing. As he's walking down the street, all the people looking at him. They're all like whispering and pointing. Something strange. All of a sudden, this Brahmana comes running, you know. Running to him, and he falls at his feet, grabs his feet. "You have to save my son! You have to save my son! You're the only one who can save my son! Please, please, promise me you'll save my son!" Like, what is going on here? This place is crazy. You know? Don't know anything that's going on. And he said, "What do you mean? Tell me, we get a hold of your son. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, just tell me you saved my son." Okay, I'll do whatever I can, if I can, anything to save your son. But tell me, what is this all about? This place is weird. So then he said, "Okay, you see. You see that mountain there? On the top of that mountain, there's a Rakshasa demon who lives there. He used to come down and rob our children and steal and eat them. Because Rakshasas are cannibals. When they see people, they don't see human beings, they see like a butcher shop, you know, the cut, you know, rib steak, this, that, whatever, you know, the whole. They just see meat segments." So, he used to come down, we made a deal with him that we all approached him, the big leaders of the village said, "You have to stop killing our children and do something." And he said, "Well, okay, if you make me a guest house, then I'll just eat the guests, and I won't eat your children." So, you, the guest house. I was just in the guest house. Then why wasn't I eaten? "Then you're the only one who can save my son. Please, please, okay." "Tell me, continue to tell me, what happened? What's the thing?" "Well, you see, my son, he invited a friend over to our house, but by mistake, the friend went to the guest house. So my one son, when he heard, he ran to the guest house to get him, but he got locked inside. Then the demon has the other key, and he came down and he ate all the guests. And he ate my son. So I went to see the demon, and I said, and the Rakshasa said, 'You ate my son. You promised us you wouldn't eat our sons.' He said, 'How could I eat your son? I just ate the guest. Yeah, but my son was accidentally visiting a guest, and then he got eaten.' Well, he should know better than that. Or what can I do? 'But you promised you wouldn't eat our children.' What can I do? You know, I'm already hating them. 'But you promised you'd do something. Give him back.' Well, look at, there's only one thing I can do. There was one person I couldn't eat in the guest house. Because you see, when I was, before I was a Rakshasa, I was a farmer. And as a farmer, I was plowing my field, and in the field next door to mine, there was somebody crying out, "Help! Help!" But I was so much in the mode of ignorance, I thought, anyway, let me finish my field and I'll go and help him. After about 20 minutes, one rishi came running and said, "You rascal, you demon. A man was being attacked by vultures and you could have gone and saved him. You could have driven the vultures away. They're cowardly creatures. But you didn't do anything. So you're a horrible person and I cursed you to become a rakshasa." No, but I was going to go, you know, I didn't know I was so urgent. But come on, he was screaming, "Help! Look at I'm really stupid, and next time I'll run, anything I have to do. Please take away that curse. I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do, I already cursed you. But what I can do is give you a escape clause. If you find somebody who chants the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and if he chants it over a bowl of water and pours it on your head, you'll be freed from this curse." So this person I couldn't eat in the guest house, he chants the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. If you get him to chant in a bowl of water and pour it on my head, then I'll be freed from the curse, and then your son will also be saved. But you better hurry up because your son is almost digested. "So you're the only one who can save my son. Will you save him? Please, please." Okay. What do we have to do? "You gotta chant the Gita, 11th chapter, over a bowl of water, pour it on his head. Please, you gotta come right away to the mountaintop and save my son." "All right, let's go." And they went together up to the top of the mountain. They're like, the ashes is sitting. And so he chants on the bowl of water, the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and he pours it over the head of the rakshasa. Then the rakshasa is liberated. Really, he gets the spiritual form. The rakshasa body dies, out comes the spiritual form. And the son is also liberated. And the son has the Satchitananda form, but he can still recognize that it's the son. So then the Vishnu Dutas come to take away these two souls who are purified by the touch of the Bhagavad Gita water to go back to Godhead. But the Brahmana is telling his son, "Hey, wait, where are you going? Come on, Dad, I'm going back to Godhead. Come on, no, your mom is waiting for you. You gotta come back home." "But Dad, I'm liberated. I can go back to the spiritual world." "No, come on, your little brother, your kid, your dog, your mom, everybody's waiting. You gotta go back to Godhead later when you get old." "But how do I know? I may fall back in Maya again. Now I'm liberated. Dad, how can I come back to the conditional life? You can't. It's so wonderful, Father. I'm so wonderful. I'm feeling so blissful." "No, but come on, your brother missed you. You gotta come home." And he's like crying and pleading. And I said, "Look at that. See this man here? He liberated me by chanting 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. You learned 11th chapter from him, chant it, and he'll be coming back to Godhead real quick, and I'll be waiting for you. Bye!" He got back in the Vishnu Gupta's airplane and went with the liberated Rakshasa back to Godhead. So I was disappointed how that Brahmana, you know, was, "No, you got to stay here." He was more interested in having a son at any cost than really thinking about what was good for the son. So sometimes like that, we get swayed by our emotion, and instead of doing what's the right thing, we do what is more pleasing to us. Srivas, he always tried to do what was more pleasing to Krishna. That was what was so special. Even though it was more than even what Krishna expected. It was nothing unusual. As I was watching Kali, my son was dying. You know, that was quite not an ordinary matter. he was so much concerned with just pleasing the Lord Chaitanya, he didn't even do that. The Lord Chaitanya objected, it's too much, Shiva. Shivas knew how to please Lord Chaitanya. One time Lord Chaitanya tested Shivas. He said, you associate with that Nityananda, that other dude. He goes and runs around like a wild man playing with kids and acting strange. I mean, he's totally out of control. How can you, you're a respectable brahmana from a good family. If you associate with such an eccentric person, it's going to take away your good name and prestige in society. You know, and he's going on and on like this. And then Srivas is like looking at him, you know, he said, I can't believe I'm hearing this from you. You know? I just can't believe it. Anyway, I don't know why you're testing me like this, but I want to tell you that even if I saw Nityananda going into a tavern or something, I know he's just going to preach Krishna consciousness. So he doesn't have any other motive other than Krishna consciousness. I'm completely dedicated to following him, no matter what. You know how to turn it down, the SGs? Hi, good on that. And Lord Chaitanya was so pleased that he was so much committed to Lord Nityananda that he said that you have purchased me. Your devotion to Guru has purchased me. Now I belong to you. I'm your property. Srivas, if you want to, you can sell me off in the market, you can auction me in the bazaar. I'm yours. In other words, when we are someone dedicated to pleasing the spiritual master, then we buy Krishna. How do we know what's pleasing to Krishna? We're pleasing the spiritual master. So in this way, Srivas, he pleased Lord Chaitanya because he was so much faithful to Lord Nityananda. The Lord Chaitanya said, now I belong to you. You can give me away, sell me, do whatever you want, you are. So that's why we can pray to Srivas because he owns Lord Chaitanya, that he can give Lord Chaitanya to us. He tells Lord Chaitanya to give the mercy to these devotees, and Lord Chaitanya will do it because Srivas owns Lord Chaitanya. You can't conquer Krishna by fighting him, or rebelling against him, or any other way, but you can conquer him by serving his pure devotee. If you serve his pure devotee, then Krishna becomes very pleased with you and purchased by you. In fact, even if someone tries to serve Krishna directly, it's less effective than serving Krishna's devotee. This is what we hear from all the Guru Parampara. This verse tells us that we read today, we should take the advice of Guru Parampara. Why we serve Vaishnavas, why we serve Guru is because we know it's more pleasing to Krishna than anything else. In this world, Krishna is more pleased when his devotee is served. Narayana Thakur brings up an important point that sometimes we get jealous or angry with the devotee. And some people might be inspired even to do something to harm a devotee and criticize. But he gives an example that actually if someone were, say a devotee was being attacked by a criminal. Yes, it could happen in South Africa. It could happen anywhere. The same devotee was being attacked and then another devotee went to save that devotee and in doing so they were killed. because of sacrificing their life for saving a devotee, they would go immediately back to God. So Narahari Thakur is saying, if dying for somebody gives you instant liberation, if they're so dear to Krishna, then how can you possibly think to do anything against the interest of another devotee? Does it make any sense at all? It's like somebody's worth dying for. You don't want to do anything to harm. Why would you want to harm such a devotee? But sometimes you get carried away. And even Indra is very dear to Krishna. Even though he may have few desires. But he's doing important work. That's why Vishnu is coming here with Indra. I mean, it's like, you got to be somebody if Vishnu is going to personally bring you. And Peter must be very dear, because how many people can see the Supreme Lord face to face? Peter seeing God face to face is coming with Indra and saying, bringing Indra to apologize to you. Taking your horse. You please excuse me. Let's settle this. So Vishnu came down to personally solve this problem. Normally nobody can see Vishnu. He very rarely appears. Even Lord Brahma doesn't have access to see Vishnu. He can just pray to Vishnu by the side of the milk ocean. So it's quite a rare occasion. And when Prithu is seeing Vishnu, so he's like ecstatic, and he's seeing the Supreme Lord. His tears are coming in his eyes. He's choked up. I mean, what is doing a 99 fire yajnas or this or that? I mean, come on. He's seeing face to face the Supreme Personality of God. He's completely overwhelmed. He can't even see him because he's stunned. He's standing there, tears are pouring from his eyes. He has to rub the tears out. He can't stop looking. He's just overwhelmed with ecstasy to see Krishna, to see Vishnu. So Vishnu is coming and advising him. This is what Prabhupada said. We shouldn't try to see Krishna, but we should try to do such a service to Krishna that he will want to see us. Just by our endeavor, we can't see the Lord. But if we do nice service for his devotee, then Krishna will be grateful. He would like to see us. Like once Prabhupada was asked, what if we were able to get the President of the United States and the King of England to come for the temple opening of the Mayapur temple of Lady Planetarium? Then Srila Prabhupada said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur would be so happy to just come and take you with his own hand in hand, back to the spiritual world, back to Golokrita. So we try to do the things which are pleasing to Krishna. Rory was making computer games. Yeah, so if you make a Sukriti game, then you get different scores for how much you can please Krishna. So when you do certain things, you please Krishna more, like preaching to the devotees, big score. Different things that everything you do adds up, but the more that you help other people to be Krishna conscious, the more that you serve other pure devotees, then it has a bigger score. Of course, I don't know exactly what score you have to fit, you know, but we know that which has higher point system and which has preaching has a higher point system than just doing something for oneself. Chanting your own japa, you're also pleasing Krishna, but when you're helping other people, it gets a bigger score. But that doesn't mean we have to pretend they like our own chanting. So if we don't chant, how are we going to keep on preaching? So like this, we try to accumulate as many points as we can. When credits, whatever you want to call it, Sukritis. Remember when I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, somebody explained it like Krishna has a little book. Prabhupada said it's very nice. Krishna has a book, he notes everything down. And so somebody says you try to accumulate as many credits as you can, so that when big test comes, you'll have enough spiritual credits to be able to cross over the test. So maybe for Preetu, he's a Kshatriya, he's a king, he was into this 100 asamega. What is that, you know, was a test. Even Preetu Maharaj got tested. So what's his priority? Doing the 100 yajna or just pleasing Krishna. As far as Krishna is concerned, let him keep it. Then, what's the thing? Even Vishnu. And taking Indra aside, let him have it. Because it wasn't important for preaching. If you do 99 or 100, what's the difference? Anyway, they can do 99, can do 100. That's not relevant. It's a matter just to do what's pleasing.
Okay.
So like that in our own life, we may have to also face so many tests. We have to have our own principles very clear what we should do at a particular time. So that is what it is to know that Krishna should do that. Relationship with Guru is personal. I remember one time I was constructing something in Mayapur, the long building, the chakra building, and then Prabhupada, he didn't like it that we were having a 7-foot high plinth. He said, it's so high, you're wasting so much money to fill it up with dirt. Just increase it up to another foot, make it 8 feet, and then use it as a mezzanine ground floor. We had already built the walls there, so then I suggested we put doors. I said, how do we put a door? So we break the wall.
Prabhupada said, well, just because we haven't laid the slab, the floor yet, we'll just put a hole in the floor and have a stairway going down. So I was thinking, you know, that's not very practical. I mean, how many people are going to go down a stairwell and use the dark basement thing? But here Prabhupada was expressing what he wanted, so I was thinking, you know, Prabhupada's purpose here doesn't want to waste any money. You're thinking breaking the wall means somehow wasting money. So I said, Srila Prabhupada, this is going to take us more money to build a stairway and the hatch on top of the stairway than it will to take out the bricks. Then can we have the door? He said, all right, if you can prove to me it's cheaper, we can do it. But the work is not going to stop. Until then, the work goes on. So they're already continuing making, you know, room after room with the hand. And I was assuming at that time we didn't have computers and no calculator. I just had a slide roller. Pages and pages of calculation. How many bricks? How many square feet? How many cubic feet? How about cement, sand, and bricks ago, and how much the wood was costing for 100 cubic feet, and I was like, well, engineering feet, let's work. By the time they had finished 8 rooms, because they were going at full speed, Prabhupada was pushing everybody. Then they came back and said, Prabhupada, and the whole building, if you put this way, we'd save 5,432 rupees. 72 paisa. So look at the rest of them. Okay, then you can now change the system.
Bother with this.
Change the plan, you know. So dealing with Srila Prabhupada was very intense. But he was very reasonable. If he had a rational reason for doing something, he could prove it and he would reconsider. But if we just had a false ego thing and you wanted to run into his false ego, you would just get smashed so bad. He would not tell, or he would just cut you off. He wouldn't take a challenge or something. He would just block you off or smash you, whatever. So you have to be very patient, cool, and just say, you know, not get upset by his intensity. Do what? What's the moral? For his interest. So I learned how wonderful it is to have a personal association with sadhus, gurus, to train us to surrender. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Any question? Rory?
Maharaj, why was he chanting the 11th chapter? Why was he chanting the 11th chapter?
Why not?
What?
You like it? You can chant any one of the chapters. Every chapter like that has like glories to it. Every chapter is in itself glorious. It has its own standing. So some people, like little kids in India, they've heard a chapter and their whole life they just chant. Usually people choose the 12th or 15th. There's one other, because there's 20 verses. Well, there's 20. 11 is a bit of a long. But this one, you like the 11th, you start chanting. Some people want to chant one of the chapters as a daily practice, just for they memorize and just chant. Is it auspicious as pleasing the Krishna? Why they choose one over another? Personal choice.
Is it
Joshi?
It sounds sort of
Prabhupada also stressed that it's a team effort. Say somebody is going out selling the samosa and somebody is cooking it. And the person that's cooking is also in that same mood that I'm participating in the preaching. And he's also getting points as a part of the team. Of course, the difficulty when you go to sell something or go to distribute something, you may face challenges. People may criticize you, they may say no, different things. So, as the devotee is tolerating the difficulties, he's getting bonus points. If everything goes smooth, you get one score, but if in the meantime you face difficulties, which make it more complicated, but you get over those difficulties, you face the challenges and cross over them, then you get extra bonus points. Because if you're going down the hall and you meet some demon, you should knock him out, you know, 200 points. I never actually played. Do I see the kids playing or something? Probably everybody else played that. Before my 10. That's why you get extra, but this is the basic everybody's getting as a team. That's what we're doing, prasad distribution, we're doing book distribution. People doing the puja, if they're also in that team mood and they're supporting the preachers, then they're also getting similar benefits. But they have to appreciate, like sometimes the puja may be very neat and clean, but then the person going out and preaching comes back, you know, dirty clothes and tired. This is like muchi, you know, it's not pure, not sushi, but going out and facing all these difficulties, it's a special austerity. So people working in the temple, they should appreciate that. But similarly, somebody is cooking, and maybe he's cooking 5,000 samosas or 100, you know, some huge number, doing so many. Which without that, the preaching wouldn't have gone on. So everybody's getting rewarded by Krishna according to their surrender. And maybe that sometimes the challenges are there very significant there in the kitchen. So the preacher should also appreciate all the people that are supporting them in their preaching. It's all a sharing, whether there's Arunam. So ultimately the issue is pleasing Krishna. We don't know exactly what scoring system Krishna has, but we know that he has a scoring system of Sukriti, and that we get credit for everything we do. Everyone we facilitate. You mean you help someone else to be Krishna conscious, then you also get the credit. I think that's what I'm trying to make my scores and helping all the preachers preach.
Can you over endeavor for purity?
Can you elaborate on that?
Finally, it's like some of it is like when in the temple they go like fall out to it, and then I'll fall down for PG, and then the other way is just kind of like sort of love without faith.
Well, yeah, there's a saying in this in the Isha Upadeshamita. I think it's the third verse, describes about second or third. Niyam Agraha.
Who's the fourth? I don't know the first four.
Niyam Agraha. Niyama means rule. Agraha. The way it's combined, it could be Agraha or Agraha. Agraha means to neglect. Agraha means to be over fanatical. Just to follow some rule without really achieving any benefit from that, just for the sake of following the rule, that's not good. Say there's some rule that says, you know, devotees should come back to the ashram before 9. But some devotee's car broke down, they came back at 9:05, and then the temple commander says, I'm not letting you in tonight, you know, there's something like this week. It wasn't his fault the car broke down, you know, it's like, you know, not reasonable, it's like, it's a general rule, but it's, I guess maybe not the best example. But sometimes we may just follow some rule very fanatically without really achieving the purpose of the rule. What was the purpose? The people getting time to be safe, not whatever the rule might be. So if someone just fanatically enforces a rule without really seeing whether the purpose of the rule is being served, because there's always exceptions, there's always, you know, unique situations. That's why devotional service requires a certain amount of intelligence to learn how to apply that principle. So when something's truly an emergency and a different, then the other extreme is just a neglect. There's no reason. Could have come back, could have done the thing in time. Didn't care. So that's agraha, neglecting. It's a gora ki. Let everybody take their breakfast afterwards. So yeah.
Is it when someone is actually in heaven to get you to become pure in the journey when Krishna protects you the water and become pure?
Yeah, just like Vishnu came to see Preacher, he was really protecting Preacher because Preacher was getting carried away and just wanted to protect his devotee. That's why he just did it personally. You can do it in other ways. Sometimes sending Shiksha Guru, sometimes sending Diksha Guru, sometimes sending some Vaishnava, sometimes in a dream, sometimes in some realization. We're always getting different kinds of help. That's why it's important to know this principle that when we have to be receptive to that kind of help, not to just, you know, be short-sighted, only see some superficial role or something, to be open to and be flexible enough but to do what's really pleasing to Krishna, not just get stuck in some kind of paradigm that's not practical. Not self-serving one. Sometimes people use a rule, you know, just like the Brahmanas in India were rejecting all the Hindus who in the old days some Muslim would spit in a glass of water and throw it at a Hindu. And then the Hindu Brahmanas would reject that Hindu and say, no, you've been converted to Muslim. He said, no, I don't want to be a Muslim. I mean, no, nothing we can do. You're contaminated. People just go around and spit in glasses of water and throw it, and people were being considered converted. It was ridiculous. It's like you go on Harinam and somebody sometimes would pour a bottle of beer over your head or something. Oh, you would be converted. It's totally ridiculous. But I don't even know what rule they were taking from what Shastra and misinterpreting it in some way that if you're contaminated, you're in it. But that was how most of the people in India got converted, by spinning. You know, you're laughing, but it's like worth crying. And then what is it? You know, it's really, and that's what Lord Chaitanya, there was this famous story about this one devotee that this happened to him. He'd gone to some Brahmana to be purified. The Brahmana said, you can be purified. You take 1 kilo of ghee and you boil it. And while it's hot and steaming, you drink it. He said, I'll die. Yes, we'll be born a Hindu. And they said, come on. I mean, that wasn't exactly the solution I was looking for. In this lifetime, there's nothing I can do. I said, no, I'm going to ghee therapy. So then he went to Lord Chaitanya and said, what can I do? I was spit on, you know. I wasn't even faithful. She said, chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Okay, you're pure. Pure. No problem. That's it, yeah. Like that, Lord Chaitanya, otherwise, oh, it'll probably be, you know, Islamic Republic. Somebody was going. Well, she kind of just stopped it dead in this chair. No more conversion. We converted itself. Although he respected Islam, it wasn't like it. People wanted to do that, but the spitting business was crazy. So they were following some kind of fanatic speculation, and it was prejudicing the whole thing.